is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, we're going to be looking at two articles published in the Sunday edition of the Washington Post. Both have to do with marriage, and both have a signal in there that we ought to be looking very carefully at the cultural conversation about what's happening to marriage. Both of these articles zero in on a very important insight we need to see. The first of them is by Stephanie Kuntz, in which she argues that marriage has simply been stripped of most of its functions except for emotional fulfillment, and thus there's no going back to what she calls a retrograde understanding of what marriage is as an objective institution. And then there's an article by a couple of women who've been asking this question: why are so many poor unmarried mothers unmarried? What is it about marriage that has caused them to go ahead and have children before getting married? And their answer is very, very interesting, and it tells us a great deal about male failure and why we need to understand that our task of raising Christian men to be husbands and fathers is absolutely non-negotiable and never more important than now. First, a review of the news. We need to note that over the weekend, North Korea fired a launch missile that was launched successfully, and it looks like this particular missile that crashed harmlessly into the Sea of Japan is a belligerent act intended to signal a new aggressiveness on the part of North Korea. And you don't have to know much about this particular paranoid regime to know that this is big trouble. And, of course, Japan is worried. You even have to wonder if China, mainland communist China, is not worried about this development. But it is very interesting to see that this is now being blamed on President George W. Bush, who, after all, we're supposedly to understand, has prompted all this by his aggressiveness towards North Korea's aggression. That's the kind of circular reasoning you'll find in the leftward media, the kind of circular reasoning that is taken for granted in much of Europe. And we'll be looking at this as this story develops. You know, I have a prediction to make on this, and that is that you're going to find a lot of changing minds and changing hearts on North Korea after the firing of this missile, the successful test of this North Korean missile. I think you're going to discover that the Japanese and a whole lot of others decide that President George W. Bush has been making a lot of sense talking about Korea. And I expect you'll be seeing that turn pretty quickly. Now, over the weekend, I have to tell you, there was a conference held in Manhattan. It was held at the Open Center, a New York institution that is focused on holistic learning. Has to do with the religious right. It also was sponsored by several groups on the far left. Listen to this. It was about theocracy. Bob Edgar, the General Secretary of the National Council of Churches, and by the way, I was on Scarborough Country over against him just in recent days. He said this: this may be the darkest time in our history. The religious right have been systematically working at this for 40 years. The question is, where is the religious left? End quote. Now, I don't want to be mean-spirited, but let me just suggest that with all charity of understanding, someone's just a little, just a few bricks short of a load if he thinks this is the darkest hour in American history. Our darkest hour as a nation. There was, of course, the Great Depression. There was, of course, the Cold War. There were two world wars. There was a civil war. But this is the darkest hour in our nation. Why? Because Christian conservatives are now politically active. There go the curtains on the National Council of Churches. And by the way, he's the one who asked the question, where is the religious left? Well, here's my response. Dr. Edgar, there's not much left of the religious left. And there's certainly not much religion left in the religious left. They've been negotiating away the truth claims of their various churches and denominations, and there's just not much there left other than hold hands, sing kumbaya, and vote Democratic. That's about all that's left. And that's the National Council of Churches meeting. And he wonders what's happened. Well, you've been leading this thing, Dr. Edgar. You tell us. Now, what is absolutely fascinating about this conference is how they got together to talk about how the religious right is trying to impose a biblical rule in America, a theocracy. And they went at two particular ideas, and it's actually one idea under two different names, Reconstructionism and Dominion Theology. Now, the fact is that I do not know of any significant evangelical leader who holds to either of these ideas. But that doesn't keep the National Council of Churches and the others at this conference warning about theocracy from making this an absolute focus. Indecency police are a major part of the theocratic states, said one particular speaker, Joan Bocaire, founder of TheocracyWatch.org. That's a site you may want to visit. She said this: the United States is beginning to fit the model of a reconstructed America. Oh, really? Well, let me just point out this. What they're really talking about here are the absolute icons of the left. Roe v. Wade, abortion on demand, and the continuing undermining of marriage, the revolutionary reconstruction of marriage as an institution between two persons of whatever gender, or for that matter, whatever number eventually. This is what's really at stake here. And they have thought, notice what he says here. This is Bob Edgar. He says the religious right have been systematically working at this for 40 years. Well, the reason why I think he went back 40 years ago is because that's when the religious left was certain that they had control. And they were certain that things are going their way. And just in the last several years, it doesn't look that way. But lest conservative Christians think that there's a values recovery in this country, all we have to do is listen to our neighbors talk. All we have to do is look at the divorce statistics. All we have to do is listen to what's going on in this country, and we'll know that our job is larger, greater, more demanding than it has ever been before. And it's not just about changing laws. It's not just about court decisions. It's about hearts. And we know that our primary task here is literally evangelistic. It's first and foremost about the gospel. But I wouldn't expect that to be understood by the National Council of Churches. And in saying that, I'm not name-calling. I'm just talking about the obvious in terms of the divide between conservative evangelicals and the liberals in the mainline denominations. Just a few days ago, we talked about Montgomery County, Maryland, and the controversy there over sex education. And you will remember that that is almost, well, it stretches our ability even to have a discussion on the radio, folks. Because in order to tell you just how awful this curriculum is, we would have to say things that would lead some of you to reach for the volume control. So just suffice it to say, if you want more information, just go to the website, albertmiller.com, and look up that article, and it will direct you to additional information. But what you need to know today is that in the Washington Times, published this morning, it is announced that the Montgomery County Public Schools have decided to bar parents from sitting in on the classes of the sex education curriculum. Now, listen to some of the things that are said here. Number one, the school's policy is, quote, classroom visits and conferences by parents and other persons in the school community are encouraged, end quote. Well, cancel that encouragement, because right now when it comes to sex education, they say that it could have a, quote, chilling effect on the educational process. Now, I love that. Parents showing up for sex education could have a, quote, chilling effect on the educational process. That's said by Brian Edwards, a county school spokesman. Well, Michelle Turner, president of Citizens for a Responsible Curriculum, said, quote, if the school feels that parents shouldn't be in the classroom, then that's a red flag for parents. Well, someone in Montgomery County has the IQ turned on here. Michelle Turner speaking the obvious truth. If parents showing up is a problem, then the parents have a problem in the curriculum. But they knew that already. By the way, another spokesman for the schools, Russ Hinke, the county's health education coordinator, said parents are usually shut out of classrooms. Quote, there are particular times of the year during National Education Week that we invite the parents in, but it's not something we have as far as a general open classroom, end quote. Well, so much for the website and the school district's policy. Christine Jurwell, or Jewell, she's the co-founder of TeachTheFacts.org. That's in favor of the new curriculum. She said, quote, speaking of sex education, she said, it's a controversial subject. You've got a lot of parents who are very vocal on either side, and maybe the schools are just trying to maintain calm. Well, I wouldn't be very calm. Not if I were a parent in Montgomery County, Maryland. Listen to some of the things that have been removed by parental insistence from the curriculum. This statement, quote, sex play with friends of the same gender is not uncommon during early adolescence. They also removed a statement that said that students would, quote, discuss how you develop your sexual identity, end quote. Now, that was taken out, but folks, you'd be shocked to know what remains in. Meanwhile, in Colorado Springs, Colorado, Focus on the Family and its headquarters have been the source of a demonstration, the site of a Soul Force protest action. Soul Force is a group that advocates for homosexual rights, especially over against evangelical Christians. Now, what's interesting here is that the media reports have such varying estimations of the number of protesters. A gay news website claims 1,000 people demonstrated in front of Focus on the Family offices on Sunday. The Denver Post says 800 gay rights advocates marched at the Focus on the Family campus Sunday, and the Colorado Springs Gazette says about 500 demonstrated in front of the Focus on the Family campus. Any more reports? We're going to be down to 50. Now, I don't know how many people were actually there, but it's somewhere between 500 and 1,000. But what's going on here is intimidation. And regardless of the number, and by the way, that's just one of the games that is played in the media, how many people showed up, etc., the reality is that what they were protesting is focused on the family taking a biblical stand on homosexuality. They have led similar efforts on the floor of the Southern Baptist Convention, and they may at your church one day, if you hold to biblical morality and you preach the Bible as the Word of God and homosexuality is sin and of redemption, the gospel is the only answer to our most fundamental problem. Get ready for the protest that will inevitably come, if not from Soul Force, then from somebody, and probably soon. We'll be back to talk about chaos and confusion over marriage in the Washington Post. It'll be a fascinating discussion. To join it, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, every once in a while, you read in the newspaper an article or a set of articles, perhaps even a series, a multi-part article, that kind of sets out an argument that is larger than what you've seen before. And in particular, on marriage, what happened in the Washington Post on Sunday is an interesting little signal of how our cultural conversation about marriage is changing. And it came not with just one article, but two articles. And the two of them together, I've called them a deranged duo of articles in my blog today. I think they really reveal a whole lot. The first of them is by Stephanie Kuntz. And you have to know her. She's written a lot about the family. She's a feminist theorist. She is one of these that's arguing for a redefinition of the family and a renegotiation of roles in the family. And you can expect this. And she comes from the far left. And you can pretty much predict where she's going to come out. But she says some things in this article that we, as those who understand marriage at a far deeper level, a biblical level, something we really need to hear. I'm just going to quote from her article. It's entitled, "For Better for Worse, Marriage Means Something Different Now," published yesterday in the Washington Post. She said, "Recent changes in marriage are part of a worldwide upheaval in family life that has transformed the way people conduct their personal lives as thoroughly and permanently as the Industrial Revolution transformed their working lives 200 years ago. Marriage is no longer the main way in which societies regulate sexuality and parenting or organize the division of labor between men and women." Now, she goes on to talk about this major shift, and what's interesting is she and I agree on what this shift is. Now, that's what makes this article interesting. I am in fundamental agreement with this very liberal author about the problem. Where we differ is about what our response to that problem should be. I think she's absolutely right when she says that marriage has been transformed from an institution that was understood to be objectively good to an institution that is tentative. It's tentative because the main thing many people now look for in marriage is emotional fulfillment. Now, here's the problem. If the main thing people are looking for in marriage is emotional fulfillment, when the marriage is no longer emotionally fulfilling, they feel free to leave. And she's onto something really big here, because it is this emotional redefinition of marriage. It is the redefinition of marriage as about meeting my personal needs rather than meeting a clear social need, a need of parenting, and a need of social stability. Once it's redefined in that way, then inevitably it's easy to get out. And she recognizes that throughout most of human history, parents did not divorce because it simply was not done. Fathers didn't leave because the society sanctioned fathers for leaving. Mothers were responsible. Children were raised. And obviously, this is not a perfect picture because among sinners, bad things happen. But those were the exceptions rather than the norm. But now, with no-fault divorce and all the rest, and with this idea of romantic fulfillment as the core of the meaning of marriage, when people are no longer romantically or emotionally fulfilled, they just leave. And Stephanie Kuntz is exactly right. Marriage has been dethroned as the regulative institution in society for sexuality and parenting. Listen to some of the other things she says, and I quote, "None of this means that marriage is dead. Indeed, most people have a higher regard for the marital relationship today than when marriage was practically mandatory." Now, by the way, that sentence is one of those things that sends me into absolute apoplexy. No one can say that with a straight face. In other words, people think so highly of marriage, they don't get married. That's the bottom line of this argument. Marriage as a private relationship between two individuals is taken more seriously and comes with higher emotional expectations than ever before in history. Well, it's the emotional expectations part, the only truth in that statement. But listen to this. Marriage is no longer the institution where people are initiated into sex. It no longer determines the work men and women do in the job or at home. Regulates who has children and who doesn't, or who coordinates caregiving for the ill or the aged. For better or worse, marriage has been displaced from its pivotal position in personal and social life. Now listen to these last words very carefully. And will not regain it short of a Taliban-like counter-revolution. Now there we are. Those of us who are contending for a biblical picture of marriage and for a normative definition of marriage and for a recovery of the fullness of what marriage is meant to be by our Creator, we are now the new Taliban. Headscarves, anyone? That's exactly the way she's labeling us. And so what you have here is her divide, and this is published in the opinions section of one of America's most prestigious and influential newspapers. What you have here is her argument that conservatives better just get up and get on the bandwagon because marriage is gone. In terms of our understanding of marriage, it's all now just a matter of renegotiating the definitions. I said there were two articles. The other is by Catherine Eaton and Maria Kefalas. It's entitled Unmarried Because They Value Marriage. And these two particular writers come back to say that this phenomenon of so many unwed mothers is not an evidence of a lack of respect for marriage, but of the fact that they hold marriage in such high esteem that they will not enter it. They have separated having babies from having a husband. Now, they go on to suggest that this has a lot to do with socioeconomic concerns. Listen to this. Marriage, we heard time and time again, ought to be reserved for those couples who've acquired the symbols of working class respectability, a mortgage on a modest row house, a reliable car, a savings account, and enough money left over to host a decent wedding. But unlike their mothers and grandmothers, young women coming of age in poor neighborhoods today are not willing to achieve these goals by relying on a man. Now, here's the take-home value from this particular article. These young women are onto something, and that is male irresponsibility. This is an indictment of the failure of husbands and of men in general to fulfill the responsibility that God gave us to marry, to protect, to provide, to respect, to cherish, to hold, and to nurture. And these women are saying, if the men aren't going to do it, then we're going to do it, but we're sure not going to separate having children from having husbands. We're not going to limit ourselves to having children only when we have husbands. They make an absolute separation. And the inevitable result is that marriage is again socially weakened, socially discounted, and made more and more irrelevant. Now, we're the people who are supposed to know what marriage is all about. As Christians operating out of a biblical worldview, we're the people who are supposed to know that marriage is about the glory of God demonstrated in the midst of His creation, as all the gifts God gives in marriage are willingly and joyously received by a husband and a wife who enter in purity into that marital covenant and keep themselves in that covenant because it's objectively right. They're not looking for this solely for emotional and romantic fulfillment. They're looking at it as a responsibility, as the very purpose for which they were created, as a critical matter of accountability. The failure of so many Christians even to understand this is a scandal in this time. The failure of so many pastors to preach about marriage in biblical terms is a symptom of a weak pulpit and of an evasive theology. The failure of so many Christian couples to show what marriage really is in the midst of a fallen world is a scandal to what Christ said to His church, and that we are to be salt and light. Because the credibility with which we preach the gospel has a lot to do with the credibility we demonstrate in living out God's plan for our lives in accordance with God's design, God's law, and God's instruction. I want to know what you think about this. You see, I think whenever from a secular source we get this kind of wisdom, even when we reject out of hand where they want to go with it, we need to acknowledge that they're onto something. Marriage has been redefined, and this redefinition is nearly fatal. If it's just emotional attachment and fulfillment, then the minute a husband or a wife doesn't feel emotionally attached, they just unattach, leave, desert, divorce. And the failure of men to live up to our responsibility, some men becoming brutal, others just callous, others just irresponsible, others never growing up from boys to men. That's something else we need to note. And as Christians, we need to figure out how we can fix this picture fast. I want to know what you think. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about marriage. We must have a better answer than the Washington Post and I want to hear it from you. 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about marriage today, and it's a topic to which we return time and time again because there is no institution that has been under more sustained attack in this postmodern age than marriage. And one of the ways of attacking it is to redefine it. And in particular, what I see happening in the Washington Post yesterday, I mean, this is not an accident. Some editor decided that these two articles needed to be published in one of America's most influential newspapers and needed to be published at the same time. And what they're suggesting is that marriage has become such a matter of esteem in the society that people aren't getting married. And that is absolute idiocy. But in the midst of this confusion, there are some interesting points for us to ponder. Stephanie Kuntz from the far left comes along and says, look, marriage has already been stripped of its responsibility to regulate sexuality and parenthood. And now it's mostly about emotional attachment. And conservatives, conservative Christians, just get used to it. Because marriage in this society is just about emotional fulfillment. Now, you know where that goes. It goes immediately to, if you're fulfilled in a man, if you're a man, then you should be able to marry. If you're fulfilled in a woman, if you're a woman, you should be able to marry. Who should say that this person can't emotionally fulfill you? And who can say for how long? And by the way, already in Massachusetts, which is the first state to have court-ordered same-sex marriage, you now have same-sex divorce. And that's just further evidence of what happens when you start destroying civilization's most basic institution. And then the second article, which is about unwed mothers, suggesting that these mothers have separated having babies from having husbands because the husbands, after all, can't be depended on anyway. I think in both of these cases, with respect to both of these articles, we need to recognize there is a gem of truth here that we as Christians really need to take seriously. Number one, we have allowed marriage to be renegotiated and re-evaluated and revolutionized such that even in many Christian circles, even in many Christian bookstores, if you look at the books about marriage, it's about emotional fulfillment, not about the hard work that marriage is intended to fulfill in nurturing, in parenting, in having and holding, till death do we part. And I think we can certainly see also that all around us are men that are simply failing to exercise their proper manhood in providing and protecting and nurturing. And thus, an awful lot of women just don't trust men. They don't respect men. And so they're looking at marriage as sort of the final social status achievement they're looking for that has nothing to do with waiting to have babies until then. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I think this is really important. So does Rebecca, calling from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was flipping through the stage, through my radio stations and turned this on, and it felt like it spoke right to me. I was, my husband and I got married when I was 7.5 months pregnant with my son. And it's interesting how getting married and really turning my life over to Christ, he was already a Christian. I was an Episcopalian, so there you go. Need I say more? I believed in Christ, but I wasn't walking with him. So ever since we got together, our marriage has been phenomenal. The Lord has brought us full circle as far as maturity, responsibility. I think that people who are not getting married and having children and not investing their lives in marriage are not coming full circle, are not maturing in Christ.
Yeah, Rebecca, I want to ask you a question. By the way, I'm glad to tell you, I know of a lot of Episcopalians who do know what marriage is. God bless them. And right now are fighting a brave battle in that denomination on behalf of marriage. But I want to come back to you for just a minute. I want to ask you a question. When you were pregnant and not yet married, did you really know in your heart that that wasn't what God had designed for you? Did you really know in your heart that you were avoiding marriage because of the responsibility that was going on there?
I knew that. I mean, at the time I wasn't a Christian, like I said, although I've always accepted Christ as my Savior. But I did know that my mind was telling me not to because of all that society puts on women. You can do this by yourself. You don't need a man. So So that's, my brain was telling me, like, all of those cultural factors were telling me, you can do this by yourself. But my heart knew. I knew that it wasn't fair to the child. It wasn't fair to myself. And, you know, there's all this pressure to also stay at home, to be in the workplace. And society sort of wants women and families broken apart by worldly things. And I stay at home now, and it's a hard battle to stay at home, but one that's well worth it.
Rebecca, God bless you. I have to tell you, it was worth doing this program today just to get your call. And I appreciate so much your personal testimony, and I'm glad when you were wandering across the radio dial, you found us. I hope you'll come back again day by day. God bless you there in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Well, we've heard from Rebecca. I want to hear from you. Perhaps someone with a similar experience, or perhaps someone right now just trying to figure these issues out. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Live nationwide from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back. The topic is marriage and what's happened to it in this postmodern age. A little wake-up call from the Washington Post over the weekend. A couple of articles that together tell us that something is shifting in the landscape of our culture and something we need to watch and observe and think about. We've had some good callers. Let's go to Victoria calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Victoria, welcome.
Hi. I was calling because clearly in the scriptures, God outlines his perfect plan for marriage. And if you talk to people about what they want, you know, people who aren't saved even, the things that they want go exactly along with the things that God has designed. I mean, inside of a woman, she, you know, really wants to be cared for and loved by her husband and loved with actions and not by emotions. And you know, men really, you know, God's design is just what everybody really wants. My parents aren't saved, and it's everything that they want clearly goes along with the same things that God had in store.
Okay, I really appreciate your call, Victoria. Let me ask you, is this what you won't settle for? In other words, this picture of the Washington Post, it says that marriage is basically about emotional fulfillment, and you can separate childbearing from marriage and all the rest. Are you willing to settle for that? Do you think that most of the young women in your generation are willing to settle for that?
I think a lot of women in my generation are willing to settle for that, but I'm not, definitely not. If you go by emotions, your heart lies to you anyway most of the time, but, you know, if you go by emotion alone, then everything's going to crumble. I mean, that feeling will not always be there in any relationship. I asked my boyfriend, because we're going to be getting married soon, and I said, would you rather have love without commitment or commitment without love? And he, without a doubt, thought the same thing that I did, commitment without love, because that love comes with the commitment.
Well, God bless you for that kind of biblical sense, Victoria, and I appreciate your call. And I hope you are a harbinger of things to come in terms of others in your generation is saying, I'm not going to settle for that low an understanding of marriage. Let's go to Tyler, Texas, where Paris is on the line. Paris, welcome.
Hey, thank you. I want to make a comment about the responsibility of the men in the marriage and the household. I think I came from a situation where my dad left when I was in elementary school, and I don't think men are stepping up to the plate in the getting involved with their kids, and not just their kids, but specifically their young boys, and spending time with them one-on-one, talking to them about what love is, what God's plan for them as a leader, as a spiritual leader of the household, and spending that time with them, sharing what God really has for us as men, as leaders of our household.
Paris, I think you're exactly right. And by the way, just last month, I wrote a two-part article on that entitled From Boys to Men, The Marks of Biblical Manhood. You might want to find that at albertmohler.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R. That's been a very, very popular two-part article, about as often republished and downloaded as anything that I've written. It encourages me that there's so much interest in that. And I think you're exactly right. If we don't raise boys to be husbands and fathers, they're not going to be. And I think that's just the bottom line. One of the main responsibilities of parenting, and especially of fatherhood, is to get our sons ready to be worth something. ready to be a contributor to the society, and more important, ready to be a husband and a father. I appreciate you making that point, Paris. It's good to hear from Tyler, Texas. Let's go to St. Petersburg, Florida. We're on WFIA. We have Scott, WTUAN. Go right ahead, Scott.
Hey, Albert, thank you very much for having me. I love your program. I just want to get to the point. I've just been married. My wife and I just married for the first time and the only time, April 9th. And it was something that really irritated me a couple weeks after the marriage, is that how it is really looked at, it's so lackadaisical and not serious, and it is an escape out, and how people that don't even know me had transferred their bad experiences and already expecting mine to fail without even knowing me, and actually had threatened to hurt me if I would hurt her. It was probably 2 weeks after that. It was like 4, 5, 6 times in 2 weeks, and it really irritated me on something that my wife and I have really based, and we wanted this marriage, our ceremony, to be glorifying to God in the holiest of holiest things as the bridegroom coming back for the bride. So it was really irritating how that is so viewed, and it was transferred onto me by just so loosely. It was amazing.
Yeah, and you're hardly alone, Scott. I hear from a lot of young husbands the same thing, and from young wives who hear from rather cynical women similar kinds of responses. Well, I know you're happy now, but let's see how long it lasts. Scott, I appreciated the fact that you said this was your first and only wedding. I think that's really, really important. And I would just encourage you to do what I know is already in your heart, and that is just concretize that. Make it a public commitment continually that you're going to live before the world, before God's people in the church, before your own children, as the Lord gives you children, in such a way that they will know what marriage is all about. If you and your wife are the only two teachers left on earth to teach the rest of humanity what marriage is all about, I just hope that you will go for the gusto here and that you'll live before the rest of the world in such a way that instead of saying, why would anyone get married, people will start saying, why would I not? Why would I not want that blessing? Why would I not want that perfect picture? Why would I settle for anything less than that? And Scott, God bless you. And it's great to hear from you. And hear this from one brother to another. Congratulations on your wedding, on your marriage. And may God just give you all blessings as you receive what God's given you in that great gift of a wife. Let's go to Mandy calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Mandy, go right ahead.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. My comment was kind of more focused towards the criticism that my husband and I found in the Christian world. We haven't found much criticism at all from our early marriage and our young 20s from our Christian friends. From our secular friends, the majority of our criticism has come from our Christian friends. We married at 21, had our first baby at 22, and our second baby at 23. And I was just so surprised by how irresponsible we were called, because we were just given a lot of criticism for following God's plan for our life and not putting that off because of money and because of the stress that it could put on us. And it has put stress on it. It really has, but it strengthened our marriage at the same time. So my comment was more that if we're going to take a stand for this and end this and take marriage back to what it originally was, then we need to be standing up within our Christian circles and being an example to our Christian friends that this was God's plan for us.
Mandy said perfectly. God bless you. And you're exactly right. That's one of the reasons why time and time again I come back to the delay of marriage into the late 20s or the 30s as a major way of weakening the institution. Because what you have is rampant premarital sex. What you have is a failure of young men and young women to grow up, especially young men in this context. And what you have is a separation of adulthood from marriage. And we as Christians, we're the people who are supposed to know better than that. Unless one is given the gift of celibacy, get ready, get mature, get responsible, and get married. When you get married, stay married. End of subject. I'll be back with a few further thoughts. I'm Albert Moeller. Well, I'm very glad we had that conversation on marriage, and I think the callers really helped to clarify the issues here. It was great to hear from some young people who said they're going to live differently, even than perhaps their parents had lived. They're going to marry differently than their parents had married, and we do see a recovery here. And I think this is a warm promise of what can happen in the church among Christians if we will go back and recover what has been lost, if we will go back and recover marriage with its dignity and with its honor. with its warmth and with all of its satisfactions that God gives us. Yes, with all of its challenges, with all of its trials. After all, God is using marriage to make us the individuals we should be in order that we can be the husband, the wife we should be, and the parents that we should be. Parenting and family life and marriage, these things are not without crises and trials. There will be skinned knees and bruised hearts. There will be disagreements. There will be a failure to see things eye to eye. But working through all of this is a part of what makes the family a little demonstration of God's glory on earth. And the very fact that we as husbands and wives stay together through thick and thin, sickness and health and all the rest, that's a testimony to the kind of covenant that will honor God, because after all, we worship the covenant-making God who keeps his covenants. And when we break the covenants that we make before him, we not only betray our own lack of character and our own lack of determination to fulfill our word, but we also slander his character. That's why it's so important that in the church we recover this, not to heap judgment upon those who have experienced brokenness and sin, but to point to the forgiveness that comes by the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ. But the first word has to be the honest word of the Bible, what God expects of us. And after what the Puritans used to call the law work, we turn to the grace work. And we point out that we are all broken people. But what we owe each other is the honest word of how that brokenness can be healed by God's grace and can become a testimony to the righteousness of God's law, to the rightness of God's design, and to the glory of God that he intended from the very beginning to be displayed among his creatures for our good. Because after all, we're not talking about marriage as some kind of domestic prison, as some of those on the far left would characterize it, but rather marriage as the arena of God's glory where we find happiness and wholeness and even holiness. You know, parental authority is under assault all over the place. And we just have to talk again and again of how parental authority has been under assault by the public schools. We talked about it from Montgomery County, Maryland today. We're going to be going up to the Northeast tomorrow to talk about a father who found himself facing court action simply because he demanded to be given advance notice of when his son was going to be indoctrinated concerning same-sex marriage. His story could be your story. That's why we're going to talk about it tomorrow. I'll meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.